We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
What's up, everybody? It's Ryan Mitchell. Let's go there with Shira and Ryan has begun. Shira Lazar is out, but guess who I'm here with? Bah, bah, bah. You know, that sounds like a Windows 98, like with the computer turns on.
Yes. Well, yeah. That's kind of a variation.
You know, it felt like something.
I was
like
trying to do a sound, the trumpets.
Yeah, I could have played a trumpet possibly. I don't know. Well, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back.
You know, it's Fridays with Char, but she's been here all week. Char says so is today.
Yes, it is.
Very excited about that. That's what I look forward to on a Friday.
Yes, and we'll be talking about some BET drama that kind of hits close to home for me.
Well, all right, and I'm pretty sure it probably hits close to home to me, honestly, the gaslighting of it all. But real quick, before we get into what's coming up today, I want to tell you about what Channel Q is doing to give you an opportunity to win some tickets to see the one and only, the Kinky Boots. So Channel Q has your chance to win tickets to see Kinky Boots at the iconic Hollywood Bowl next month. It's the weekend of July 8th, 9th, and 10th. The winner of six Tony Awards, including Best Musicals, Kinky Boots, inspired by a true story, tells the story of an unlikely friendship built around some very unlikely shoes. I almost said the winner of six Tony Awards. Because of Kinky, you know what I mean. Well, you know, it features Wayne Brady in the role of Lola, Jake Shears as Charlie, and Hairspray Tony Award winner Marissa Jarrett Winokur in the role of Pat. Y'all, tickets, you can literally go to enter to win at wearechannelq.com. But guess what? Today's the day. In the 5 p.m. hour, we're going to have your chance to win a pair of tickets, too. So I hope you're sticking around. I hope you're comfortable, because at 5 p.m., we got your tickets to win some, we have your chance to win some tickets to Kinky Boots at the Hollywood Bowl. So listen up. I'll have more details a little bit later in the show. Okay, so here's what's happening on today's show. We're talking about the January 6th hearings that aired last night, and wow, a lot went down, and we are going to cover it. We also have some super talented folks coming on today, including writer, showrunner, and founder of Black Boy Writes Media, Mike Gayo, and the host of Odyssey's own It's Okay to Say Gay podcast, featuring the host, Femi Redwood. So much happening on this show. Let's get started with a couple of headlines. You ready, Char?
I am.
Okay, so, wow. So Ivanka Trump, one of the most damning kind of interview clips that we saw last night. Did you end up watching anything last night?
So I did not. I just saw highlights.
Protect your peace.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I just saw highlights last night and this morning.
I didn't watch it live. I ended up watching like an MSNBC recap and then CNN recap. Well, Bill Barr, a former attorney general, said, quote, "I made clear that I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was BS. At last night's hearings, Republican Representative of Wyoming Liz Cheney played part of Ivanka Trump's testimony to the House Select Committee, where she claimed she accepted that the Justice Department and Attorney General Barr had not found voter fraud sufficient to affect the 2020 elections. Here is what she said.
General Barr made that statement.
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he was saying.
This is the president's daughter.
So the fact that everyone around President Trump at that time was literally saying, we don't believe this, but then they're also complicit because they kept going with it.
Yes. And, you know, Sonny Hostin made a good point on this morning on The View, saying one of the reasons that that Fox News chose not to air it, of course, is because of the likes of Laura Ingraham and because of the likes of Sean Hannity. Yeah. Those text messages were going to be read about them freaking out.
Well, we got a clip that we're going to play of that a little bit later on, coming up, actually, because we're going to continue to discuss all of the hearings.
And Tucker focused on inflation last night and went for about an hour commercial free.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, okay, the Rupert Murdoch and company.
Yeah, we have a compilation clip that we're going to play of Fox News during the hearings and what was actually happening on the hearings. And you're going to hear the juxtaposition of that. Really quick, before we hop over to the T report super quickly, effective on Sunday, June 12th, those traveling to the U.S. will no longer need a negative COVID-19 test one day before their flight to enter the country. Some White House official told ABC News, saying, "We are able to take this step because of the tremendous progress we've made in our fight against the virus. If a new variant emerges, the CDC may consider reinstating the pre-departure testing requirements." All right, that is your headlines. Let's head over to the T report super quickly.
So this T report is so troubling to me because it kind of echoes R. Kelly and everything that he had going on with Azriel Cleary. So remember earlier this week I was telling you about Ezra Miller and that 12-year-old girl when he was 23, et cetera, et cetera. Well, she has recently come out and said that everything is like her doing. Like, she recorded a video to Instagram and she's basically calling her parents crazy and saying that they're harassing her. And she said it's really distressing that the narrative of the victim in question is not being granted in any trust. She said in the new video, "I worked really hard to make it really clear what was going on. If the statements are too profoundly contrasting to whatever assumptions those of us have garnered and have chosen to carry, I'd like to say that it's nobody's business and that no one is owed a story or an outcome." So it's just kind of, she does sound brainwashed. That's what I got from all of this. And the parents, I mean, the LA Times just released a really good in-depth article around the parents filing suit. But you know what? They cannot find, like, the law cannot find or locate Ezra Miller in order to serve the papers.
Really?
So it's very R. Kelly. It's like in the same, it's parallel.
Gosh.
And I'm not saying that he is R. Kelly, well, excuse me, that they are R. Kelly. But there are certain details that make me itch.
It's a little strange. That's your T report, though.
In the name of grooming. But yes, that's your T report for this hour. Stick around, because last night we were all on Twitter in a frenzy because of a certain pop star doing something, trolling us, as she typically does. So you want to keep it right here for more.
All right, well, up next we have Mariana Alfaro from the Washington Post back with us to break down what happened at last night's January 6th hearings. And let me just say, a lot went down. So if you did not watch, we got you covered right here. Let's go there.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
All right, we are back. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol attack held its first prime time hearing on Thursday evening, detailing the findings of the panel's investigation and playing new video from closed doors depositions of members of former President Donald Trump's team and depicting the violence at the Capitol. Now, if you were wondering what Fox News was saying during the hearing, here's a clip from the recount showing Fox News during the hearing versus the actual hearing. Just listen, please.
The most boring. There's absolutely nothing new.
Most of the footage we are about to play has never been seen.
It is a made-for-TV smear campaign against President Trump.
The judge evaluated the facts, and he reached the conclusion that President Trump's efforts to pressure Vice President Pence to act illegally by refusing to count electoral votes likely violated two federal criminal statutes.
There's no respect for truth. There was no insurrection. There was a riot, a small one, that got a little bit out of hand.
Leaders on Capitol Hill.
A small riot that just got a little out of hand. Well, joining us to break all of this down is Mariana Alfaro, the reporter on the Breaking Political News team at Washington Post. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I know that was probably wild for you to hear, but I just want to dive in. What were your first initial reactions to everything when you watched last night?
Yes, I mean, I was just, a lot of it was things that we expected to already know, you know, a lot of things that my colleagues have reported, that other places have reported. But the emotion is something that no one prepares you for. You know, just like seeing these people who were there, who survived this, who saw their fellow officers or fellow lawmakers under like a physical attack. It was a whole other level, you know. I live near the Capitol. I was flying back to D.C. the day of the attack, so I wasn't here when it happened. But, you know, it's just a whole another, I guess, degree of hurt that we saw yesterday.
What's something that we learned new from this? Because there's a lot of information and a lot of misinformation floating around. So what are some new things that we learned from yesterday's airing of this?
Yeah, so yesterday's year was particularly focused just on laying out the terrors and the horrors of these like far right groups that kind of led the charge into the Capitol. And one of the things that was new and that we hadn't heard before was one of the officers, Carolyn Edwards, she testified yesterday. She was one of the Capitol Police officers, the first one to get injured during the attack. She told us that she saw Brian Sicknick, a fellow officer, the moment he was injured, the moment that he got attacked by the rioters, and how she tried to help him. She tried to reach him, and she was pepper sprayed the moment that she like turned around to see him.
Wow.
And that the graphic detail of that, we hadn't heard that before. This was the first time that we actually heard someone relay how this officer was injured. And if you follow, you know, Officer Sicknick passed away the day after the attack. He had two strokes. And so he was one of the deadly victims of this riot. So that was a particularly emotional moment, I think, for everyone in the room.
No, it most definitely was. There were so many of those moments because the way that this committee laid out the information, I felt like they did such a beautiful job at this. And they really actually set up the stage quite nicely to see, you know, how the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers really were in the middle of this and taking word for word, even Trump's tweets. Can you talk about how their involvement was seen last night during these hearings?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you said it very, very right. It's just being laid out in a very storytelling way, like a very, like, this is the evidence we've gathered. This is a proof. We have visuals, we have video, we have audio. And this is for the American public to understand that this was, you know, something we've never seen before. And again, the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys were center stage yesterday, and it kind of, I don't know how the word would be there, but it just kind of showed us how carefully planned this had been, but also how messy it was. You know, this wasn't just like a perfectly formed militia. This wasn't like super trained soldiers or whatnot. These were like regular Americans who had been told something so many times and who believed a certain set of things that made most Americans stone, and they just, you know, ran with their gut and ran with their anger and ran with their thoughts into the Capitol. And we got to see that side. You know, the other witness yesterday was a British filmmaker who was working on a documentary about them.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, before the attack, we got tacos. Like, that's not what you expect from some group of people who could just break into the Capitol and be this violent. And so I think that just kind of makes us realize, you know, what is going on in the country that's leading these men to, like, take up arms in this way. Like, that's just kind of another layer of terrifying, I guess.
Yeah, I saw that footage. It was really wild. And do they know that tacos are Mexican food? You know, these people, because they don't like brown or black people, but you can eat our cuisine before you go do an insurrection. So what should we be looking forward to in the hearings coming up?
Yeah, so there will be at least two more hearings next week, just next week alone. The next one's on Monday morning. And so that one, the committee explained yesterday that they're going to kind of lay out how Trump kind of tried to influence government powers to steal the election, even though he knew he had lost. And that's the thing, too. Like, we think that Trump knew he had lost. How in-depth is that belief in his brain that he didn't lose? How much does he actually believe that? So that's Monday. And then Wednesday, we're going to hear from whether Trump tried to corrupt the Justice Department and its top officials with his own, false claims of election fraud, and
yeah,
how he could have, you know, manipulated this huge department into following him. And today it was revealed that three former top Trump DOJ officials are going to testify on Wednesday. So that's definitely going to be one to watch.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Mariana, thank you so much for always joining us. I can't wait to have you back next week so you can break it down even further. Mariana Alfaro, a reporter on the Breaking News Political News team at The Washington Post, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, well, coming up next, we have all seen these gas prices, but that's not the only price going up lately. In fact, everything is becoming more and more expensive. We have another journalist from the Washington Post on with us next to talk about why we are experiencing the highest inflation spike in 40 years. Don't go anywhere. That's up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
So we are back. Households across America are, you know, grappling as inflation continues to rise. And our next guest is here to break down why we are seeing and feeling the pain of this being at a 40-year high. Joining us is Rachel Siegel, the Federal Reserve and domestic reporter at the Washington Post. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So before we get to the question of why we're here, can you paint the picture of where we are right now?
I can try my best in a time that is really difficult to offer a snapshot for because so many things are seemingly contradictory but also happening in real time. But the main thing that people are likely feeling about the economy is the highest inflation in 40 years. It's inflation that has seeped into every corner of the economy, touches every part of our budgets. And I'm sure that's not a surprise to listeners, given what we're seeing at the gas pump, at the grocery store, for rent, and pretty much everything in between.
Would you say that, you know, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is possible, for where we are right now in the economy? Or is that just a piece of the overall puzzle?
I think it's a piece of the overall puzzle, and in some ways, the latest piece of the overall puzzle. So to back up a little bit more than a year, inflation started climbing because of all these factors tied to the pandemic. There were supply chain issues. There was really high consumer demand when supply chains couldn't keep up. But the latest iteration of blows to the economy has been Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In particular, it's dealt a massive blow to global energy and fuel and oil supplies. And that is trickling down to what people are paying per gallon at the gas pump. We're about to hit $5 nationally on average. And in many ways, that's a direct tie to Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Yeah, and I guess I think the question everyone wants to know is, how do we bounce back from this? Because your article, it really broke down in like five different charts. I would recommend everyone head over to the Washington Post to check that out because it's so detailed. But in these charts, it's really like, how do we bounce back is the question. When I looked over everything, I just wanted to know.
I want to know, too. And I think it's the question that we're really trying to put to policymakers who are in charge of making those decisions. So the main government agency that is in charge of controlling inflation is the Federal Reserve. The Fed has put out a plan to raise interest rates in some of the most aggressive hikes that we've seen in more than 20 years. The question, though, is whether or not they're coming in too late. And there seems to be a consensus not only are they coming too late, but, you know, whether or not interest rates are going to be a match for the kind of inflation that we're seeing. Interest rates are designed to cool down the economy, but they cannot boost oil supply or fix supply chains or end a war. And those are some of the things that the Fed is up against that their toolkit just doesn't have.
There's so much that goes on with this conversation and that also goes into this conversation. In what ways can our finances be properly delineated to get us up out of here? Because I see conversations bubble up all the time about where the Biden administration seems to be giving money versus, you know, our own suffering citizens right here in the United States.
It's a great question. And I think that there is a real disconnect, both if you are a policymaker in the Biden administration, or you're at the Fed, or you're a reporter trying to make sense of these things, of how the economy is felt. And there are many ways in which the economy has made a tremendous rebound from the depths of the coronavirus pandemic. The unemployment rate is low. There are job openings. But at the same time, there is this incredibly visceral feeling that the economy is not working for everyone. That's especially the case if your budget cannot absorb, you know, rent that is up 5.2% compared to the year before, higher groceries. And that's a tremendous challenge for everyone.
Yeah, and I know we're talking of, like, this is turning into a downer conversation because it is. But what are some of the encouraging signs? You spoke about that in your article that you co-wrote as well. What are the encouraging signs that are coming up for us that we could be looking out from the other side of this?
Yeah, so the Federal Reserve, you know, their goal is to start to see cooling in parts of the economy that have just gotten red hot. And so the main example of that is the housing market. Home prices have soared at the same time that for much of the pandemic, interest rates and therefore mortgage rates were very low. since interest rates have started to go up and since the Fed has outlined a plan for them to keep going up, mortgage rates have had a serious run up, and that is starting to cool demand among buyers who are competing for very few homes on the market. The problem, and not to turn that into a bit of a downer, is that it takes a long time for not only home prices to go down, but for then that to then trickle into rent prices going down. So it's like holding on to encouraging signs, but also hoping that they continue on that trend for a very long time.
Well, all right. Thank you so much for joining us to break all this down. Once again, this was Rachel Siegel, the Federal Reserve and Domestic Economy Reporter at Washington Post. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. All right. Well, coming up next, we are actually talking, you know, that reporter that we talked about earlier that made headlines for that retweet?
Yes, with the sexist joke.
Well, apparently there's another reporter that got in trouble.
Oh, I've heard some things.
And we're going to talk.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to talk about it up next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Okay, so at the center of the whole Washington Post, Dave Weigel situation that we talked about, where a Washington Post reporter was put on leave, like he was suspended without pay, for a sexist tweet that he tweeted. Well,
that he retweeted.
Retweeted, yes. Well, the story and the plot just continues to form. Because the Washington Post staff reporter, Felicia Sanmez, who tweeted a screenshot of the sexist joke that Weigel had retweeted, that said, "Fantastic to work at a news outlet where retweets like this are allowed." She also reportedly discussed the matter in an internal Slack channel. Well, that all led to her being fired
She has been one to keep up some controversy.
Yes.
Which I most recently learned about. I didn't know this.
Yeah, she's been at the center, the center of all of this. And, you know, Weigel, he did apologize. But over the past weekend, Felicia retweeted posts critical of Weigel and accused the Post of having different social media policies for different employees. Well, she has had, like, basically this contentious relationship with the Post, which she actually sued last year. So honestly, they're probably ready to get about that.
Oh yeah, they're like
But she has now been fired for basically accusing, you know, for the whole publicly shaming, and she criticized the paper's leadership. And I just wonder, because Vanity Fair, they actually posted a piece on this,
mm-hmm.
and the writer of this piece said this, and I think it's really interesting to add to this conversation because I think two things can exist. The writer of this said, "The backlash against Felicia Sanmez smacks of annoyance that a woman would have the gall to speak up about systemic cultural issues. Her tweets aren't about one dude or one bad joke. They're about newsroom policies being unfairly or inconsistently applied." What do we think about this? I mean, this is like a social media meltdown that the Washington Post is having to deal with.
Well, you know, as far as that's concerned, I do agree. You know, she used his tweet as a launching pad for a larger conversation. It was not, the tweet was not directly aimed at him, I'd argue.
No, because she didn't even tag him. She screenshotted.
She just said, "It's nice to know that I work at an establishment that, you know, you can do this at." You know, so to me, it was more of a critique of the Washington Post and not a jab at her coworker. But, you know, he caught a stray. And
he sure did.
And I'm not for silencing women at all. However, in this context, I wonder if she's one of those ambulance chaser types, you know? And that's not to say that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if the Washington Post just decided to cut their losses because she's too much of a risk, or
well,
if
the ways that she kept going. I think there was a moment where okay, we all saw where it can end here. But it seems like because
she was like, no, and another thing,
And, you know, it just felt like she just kept going and going and going.
Yeah.
And then if you already have kind of bad blood existing in your workspace, I wonder, it's just like, do you just read the room and maybe text your friends and go out to wine and talk to, you know, get your grievances out through that way instead of publicly doing it?
I saw one of her colleagues tweet her and was like, "Sis, why are you still going? Like, we've had internal meetings."
Yeah.
Almost like, girl, we just hopped off the Zoom call. Why are you now on Twitter as if none of this conversation
is
happening?
Kanye West and Kim Kardashian. Yes. I've never seen my kids, but was just there the other day and picked them up.
That's what it's appearing like. We're having internal discussions about this on the Slack channel and on the Zoom, and then you keep going to Twitter, you know, keeping up the dust storm up.
Yeah, and it's super annoying that in the midst of everything that's happening in the world right now, that these two, this story is like being centered when they're journalists. They're not supposed to be at the center of any story.
You're not supposed to be the story.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
So it just feels.
And even with Twitter,
really
the goal is to never be the main character of Twitter.
But that doesn't really happen, I guess. But we have more show coming up. Let us know your thoughts.
Now she's out of a job.
She sure is. She
Dave Weigel is out for a month without pay, which is refreshing to hear. And she's gone. But you know what? She'll undoubtedly end up at some other publication.
We'll see. Up next, though, more top of the hour news and what celebrity came out in an Instagram post yesterday. Actually, we talked about Rebel Wilson, but I'm just very happy about her. But I know you have something else coming up in the T Report, right?
I do. There's a pop star. I know I teased about a woman, but this is about a man in distress. He is in distress. He was denied. Well, you know what? I'll tell you. Just stick around.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back, another hour down, and we are here. Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, and I am Ryan, and who is with me?
And I am not Shira. If you take the I out and rearrange those letters, you'll get Char. Hi, everyone.
A simple, hello, I'm Char. Oh, I love it when Char's here. It's Char Says So Fridays.
Yep, and we are talking something pretty heavy. But you know what? It's a tale as old as time, and that's coming up later in the show.
Wow. That threw like Tamron Hall when she was about to do some like really sad story in her talk show.
I like to keep it as vague as possible.
Yeah.
You all better stick around now.
Oh, but we also have the incredibly talented Mike Gallo. You may know his work on HBO's Insecure. You know, the Issa Rae one. He was a writer on this show.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very, very excited that he's going to be joining us because he has a really incredible initiative that we wanted to highlight and take the time out to chit-chat a little bit with. So let's talk about our next clip. Our top of the hour headlines. Let me get into that. So we have Clarence Thomas's wife. Did I say Thomas?
Yes, it's Thomas. Miss Jenny, honey.
I would say Thompson for some reason.
I don't know. Maybe you need to talk about that with your
therapist.
Yeah. Because you do. That's your default. When you see Thomas, you say Thompson.
Maybe I'm just like dyslexic or something.
Maybe so. Whoopi
is. Which is fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it. Thomas, though. Clarence Thomas.
I have dyscalculia.
What is that?
Something I'll tell you on
Friday. Okay. Okay. So top of the hour headlines. Clarence Thomas's wife, Jenny.
Yes.
She emailed 29 Republican Arizona lawmakers urging them to reject Biden's election victory and choose their own electors to certify a Trump win. Yo, Jenny is the worst. If you don't know her, she's the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas.
You know, the one that looks like a bullfrog.
That number of lawmakers she contacted is 27 more than previously known and indicates an even greater involvement on her part in Donald Trump's effort to overturn the election. People are now urging Justice Thomas to recuse himself from all January 6 cases. Kevin McCarthy, House Minority Leader, was asked if he thinks Justice Thomas should recuse himself, and here is what he had to say.
No, I think Justice Thomas could make his decisions like he's made them every other time. It's his decision based upon law. If you spent any time studying the Supreme Court justice, he's one who studies correctly. And I mean, from all the way through, if he sees it's not upholding the Constitution, he'll rule against it. If it's the Constitution, that's what his job should be. It's him.
Really? We trust that? Totally. Really? Really?
Okay.
Those damn Republicans. Really interesting. They're going to stick by each other no matter what. Well, the Pentagon is ending a longstanding restriction on service members with HIV. Monday, they announced the Defense Department has officially ended a 1980s-era policy that restricted HIV-positive service members from deploying overseas and being promoted into leadership and management positions. U.S. District Judge Leonie Brinkham of Eastern Virginia found that the Pentagon's classification of HIV as a chronic condition did not reflect modern scientific understandings of the virus. Honestly, what took so long?
I don't know why we don't update these things as we go.
It's so annoying. All right, so the Carroll County Board of Education in Maryland adopted a policy on Wednesday that prohibits pride flags from being displayed in schools under its jurisdiction. Under the new policy, which the board adopted by 4-1 vote margin, flags that are not specifically included in its language cannot be flown, posted, or affixed to school buildings and facilities. Former Maryland Attorney General Doug Gansler, who is running for governor, took to Twitter saying, "This is shameful, regressive, and exactly the wrong message to be sending to our LGBTQ plus youth." All right, it's time for our T Report. What is happening over there, love?
So Justin Bieber isn't having the best week. The first, I'm going to combine two stories because him and Haley, his wife Haley, were denied at a restaurant in New York City, an upscale restaurant, because they didn't have a reservation. He thought he could just throw his celebrity card down. And,
but who told him that?
I mean, that's... I wonder if the person still has their job. I really do question, because you know how Bieber likes to, you know, urinate in mop buckets in the back of the restaurant.
Does he still do that?
I don't know. It's just certain things I'll never forget, like Ariana licking the donuts. Nevertheless, Justin Bieber has been battling a serious virus, you all, one that has left the right side of his face paralyzed, and he'll be needing to take some time off to get better. Now, the singer posted on a video Friday explaining to fans why he had to postpone several shows over the last week. He has something called Ramsey-Hunt syndrome. Have you heard of it?
I've never heard of it, but we do have a clip of him talking about it.
Let's take a listen.
Nerves, and has caused my face to have paralysis. As you can see, this eye is not blinking. I can't smile on this side of my face. This nostril will not move. So there's full paralysis in this side of my face. So for those who are frustrated by my cancellations of the next shows, I'm just physically, obviously not capable of doing them.
He better sing from
this
the side of his
scary.
Mouth.
Scary. He's going to have to take some physical therapy.
That's actually really
Remember,
sad.
Remember, Haley just had a stroke a few months ago
yeah.
at breakfast.
Maybe
what is going on
diet.
With the Biebers?
Yeah, maybe it's in the diet or something. Who
oh,
knows?
My gosh. My heart really goes out to him because...
And it's stress-related.
Yeah. He's going to have to do physical therapy and facial yeah. exercises to get back in fighting shape. So that is the T Report for this hour. You want to stick around because I got all the tea on Britney's wedding yesterday.
And you also have the tea on what's coming up next, don't you? Char says so.
Yes. We'll be talking Lil Nas X versus Black Entertainment Television.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Well, it's that time of the week. It's Friday.
Come
and
on,
it's
Char
time
says
for
so.
Char says so, good people. And today, Ryan and I will be talking about something that probably we both can certainly weigh in on. Lil Nas X and BET. Now, in case you've been living under a rock, Lil Nas X has been going at it with BET, and he's not holding back. Now, this is a direct result of the BET Awards nominations for the 2022 year. They just came out, and Lil Nas X is not counted, but Jack Harlow is on there a few times.
Yeah.
So the string of names, I mean, it's the usual suspects. Drake, Kanye West, you know, Doja. There's a lot of people nominated, but despite Lil Nas having an exceptionally successful career and year in 2021.
Had some of the biggest songs of last year.
Yeah, didn't he break a Billboard record
yeah.
in 2021?
I mean, he's been breaking Billboard records since he... Old Town Road.
Yeah,
you know?
You're right, since we met him.
Yeah.
And so... I should mention that Lil Nas X has rattled off a series of tweets, some of which has been deleted. One of them is, this is not over a BET award. This is about a bigger problem of homophobia in the black community. Y'all can sit around and pretend all you want, but I'm going to risk it all for us.
Come on.
He has a new song out. I want to play this clip before we dive into the discussion. Let's take a listen to the new song.
All right, here we go.
BET. 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 BET.
Now watch it be catchy. I'm hearing that it's featuring NBA Youngboy, and while fans also pointed out that queer artists like Tyler, the Creator, and Frank Ocean have been nominated for plenty of BET awards in the past, Lil Nas X says, you know, he loves them to death, but we can admit that queer men are more respected when they do less feminine things, or am I making that up? I mean, hello, patriarchy.
I mean, points are made.
Okay, so enough of that. Catch up, folks. So,
yes.
This is something that I was personally conflicted with as well. You know, BET had an issue, a kerfuffle that kind of came up in 2013 at their award ceremony with B. Scott, someone who was gender nonconforming and I guess what we would have called androgynous in the past, who is now trans non-binary and uses they, them pronouns. And so then when I'm working with BET...
And
I'm kind of like before, I should mention B. Scott and BET, they have patched things up because B. Scott just hosted Lena Waithe's after show for 20s. But it is a little uneasy, and there does seem to be a bit of cherry picking. Also in 2019, no one from the cast of Pose walked the carpet. I worked the carpet, and I'll be working it again this year.
Oh, you are?
Yeah,
oh,
I'll
congrats.
Be working it again this year. Thank you. And so what do you have to say, Ryan? Because I feel like I'm giving a whole bunch of word salad to our listeners.
Yeah, here's the thing. For me, I think Lil Nas X, one thing that I really admire about him, he's like, guess what? Once I came out, there's no way I'm going back in.
Yeah.
I'm not hiding myself. I'm going to be who I am. And a lot of people deem that as him making being queer his entire personality. But that's not true. He knows who he is. He knows what he wants to be in the public. And he's standing firm in it. And the fact that when it comes to, you know, the BET Awards, where a lot of people, you hear them complain about the Grammys and not being nominated. Mm-hmm. But the BET Awards is ours. As a community, it's our staple. It's something to be said to be nominated. Yes, he walked the carpet last year. Yes, he got to perform last year and he made, you know, a very jaw-dropping moment.
Was that last year or 2020?
That was last year, yeah.
2020, they had the good virtual performances.
Right, and so last
year is when he shook it up with the kiss.
And made
it,
you know, kissing with his boyfriend at the time. And so, for me, it's just really frustrating that we have to acknowledge from the Dave Chappelle of it all that there black people, unfortunately, cishet black people do not think about intersectionality. And there has to be some, and especially BET came out with the statement saying
that they love him. I forgot to mention that they love Lil Nas X. And I thought it was weird because they said their voting committee, no one from BET is on their voting committee.
Which is wild.
So wait.
Like, that don't make any sense.
It does not. 1+1 is not equaling 2.
Doesn't make any sense to me.
I also feel it imperative to take this time to kind of, you know, really note on a public platform that black people are not, you know, inherently more homophobic than any other group. We're just specifically talking about this case because, you know, that is a stereotype and it is not true. Yeah. Every community, I would say, is neck and neck.
No, I would agree. I would agree. But I think when we're talking about communities that are already marginalized, there are ways for us as people who still exist with privilege can still further marginalize, further marginalize.
And there's something
other
to
people.
Be said about Jack Harlow being nominated because black people, in fairness, a lot of us would not even know a Jack Harlow if it was not for his feature on Lil Nas X's song.
And it's just always something about a white man that can either dance or rap that black people sometimes go off for.
Oh, yeah. We love a shuck and jive when it's not coming from
not
us.
A shuck and jive.
You know, the invite to the cookout, you know. And Jack Harlow's PR team is really working overtime to make him appeal to black women, but that's another conversation for another day. But all in all, how are you feeling about this? We just worked with BET, 2 months ago?
I mean, as someone who works a lot with Viacom, it is unfortunate. And for me, I've been existing in this space where I'm like, well, should I be like engaging with this online? And I am. Yeah. I'm most definitely, because I think it's firm to, we should. You can't just use us and call out and call us to come do these things so it can seem like you're, you know, you're inclusive and you're all about being there in the intersections of our community, when really we haven't seen the work. And when we're talking about allyship, especially when your award show is during Pride Month.
Yeah.
We have to have serious conversations here.
And what I will say is, and don't take this out of context, it seems like...
I'm taking it out of context. I'm clipping that moment. So go ahead and say it.
It just seems like the people that are on the ground and that are our peers are really doing the work. It just seems... It appears to me that the higher you go up in the food chain within certain companies, the more problematic it gets. That is what I'll say. Because it seems like... It seems like people that I've talked to and even people that I know that have personally worked there and done things, like, they are really trying to do the work and make things more inclusive. But it seems like the higher ups are like, nah, don't want to air that. Don't want to invite that. Don't want to do that. But we're never going to get anywhere until we recognize all of us to be, you know, in this together.
And there's only going to be more queer artists there.
Oh,
I mean, we have Saucy Santana, who's finally signed, whose music is doing incredible.
I'm wondering what that would look like, because there is a certain faction of Black people who seem to be way more receptive to Saucy, because Saucy Santana is effectively the third member of the City Girls, versus someone like Lil Nas X, who is a rapper but is rooted in a lot of pop music as well.
Yeah, well, that's your Char says, so I appreciated this. If you want to sound off on this conversation, hit us up at LGT Show, you know?
You just, y'all just make sure y'all know what y'all said. Now, we invite all perspectives, but just, you know, be cognizant of how you're sounding off, and I'll put it at that. I'll leave it at that.
Well, up next, the fun continues. We have writer, showrunner, and entrepreneur Mike Guile joining us to discuss his new show, his mentorship initiative, and what it was like being an intersectional, well, what it is like being an intersectional writer in this industry, and of course, Issa Rae, Insecure, all the good stuff. Up next, don't go anywhere.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
From Haiti to Hollywood, Mike Guile is a rising changemaker known for his writing and roles on HBO's Insecure, Netflix's Jenny and George, and Send Help, which is a new series that he co-created for AMC's All Black Network, and it's set to premiere this summer. I'm so glad that you're on the show joining us today, Mike, because you got a lot going on with your Black Boy Rights initiative, your mentorship program. So I want to start out talking about that. Black Boy Rights, what exactly is it, and why did you feel the need to start this mentorship initiative?
Hey, y'all. First of all, thank you so much for having me on your platform. I'm just, you know, grateful to be here. And great question. You know, I feel as though there's always been a diversity issue in Hollywood. So many reports come out, whether it's like UCLA or WGA or the NAACP. Surveys that come out just expressing how much there is a lack of diversity in Hollywood. So my program aims to kind of like fill that gap and provide pre-WGA writers with a opportunity to have access, to be amplified, you know, to find work. So and I felt like I needed to do it only because I was helped along the way, you know, in my journey. And there are so many people that took time to really nurture my career and mentor me. And I felt as though I needed to do the same for others. So that's what birthed the mentorship initiative.
Which is quite incredible. And it's one of those things that Char just mentioned, that we don't get to really see that sort of representation, right? And so what were some of the things that you learned through your career that you really wanted to pass on to this next generation of writers and show writers, you know, taking on their roles in Hollywood?
Oh, great question. I think most of all is how to maintain a sense of visibility. I think that there are many extremely talented writers out there, but that doesn't mean anything if you don't amplify yourself, if no one can see you, if you aren't able to take up space, if, you know, people aren't giving you a shot. And a lot of times people can't give you a shot because they don't know that you're there. Or at least sometimes the excuse from a lot of executives or showrunners or, you know, individuals looking for writers it's, oh, I don't know where to find the black writers. I don't know where to find the diverse, you know, writers. But we're right here, you know what I mean? So it's a matter of making yourself visible so that excuse no longer exists.
With a reported 18% of screen credits going to minorities and 57% of queer creators reporting ongoing microaggressions, how can diversity in the writer's room help shift the perspectives of black people and or queer people in America?
I think a lot of times when, you know, writer's rooms are being put together, they have like the token black person or the token gay person or the token disabled person to speak to that experience, when in actuality, you can't have one speaking for an entire group. Like, you have to be able to have not just diversity of people in a room, but like diversity of thought, because not every black person is going to have the same thought about how they operate in the world and what experiences that they have. So I think it's, you know, really important not just to be able to have several different types of black people or people of color or disabled individuals or what have you in the room, but it also just nurtures the idea of like, okay, diversity of like thought, how people think. Everyone thinks differently. Ways in which to kind of like help facilitate that is reminding those individuals who are higher up, who are in those positions of power to be able to hire folks, to remind them of that, you know?
Yeah.
And for myself, as someone who, you know, became a co-showrunner last year, my first thought was, okay, my writer's room. How do I create a diverse experience in my room? And really make everyone feel included in the process of writing the series, you know? And it's not just about having that one woman or one black woman or like I said before, like one gender nonconforming person. It's about having a variety of individuals in the room that express different experiences,
yeah,
and have just a different way of thinking. It just makes your work better.
No, it most definitely really does. And, you know, we could really talk to you all afternoon. You're just so incredible. And I feel like the work that you're doing is so beautiful. I just want to give everyone listening the opportunity to find out how they can join this initiative. How can they, you know, be a part of the Writers Media Initiative that you have? And then also, I want to set you up to talk a little bit about your show before we wrap up here.
Oh, no, absolutely. The Black Boy Writes, Black Girl Writes Mentorship Initiative is a year-round program. If you'd like to apply to the program, applications usually open in, like, November, and that is in partnership with Stage 32, which is, like, this online screenwriting platform that exists. But, yeah, so if you'd like to be a part of the program, I would say look out around November for the application process for the new year.
Well, all right. And then, of course, Send Help, the new series that you co-created for AMC's All Black Network, is set to premiere this summer. Mike Gayo, thank you so much for being a part of Let's Go There today. We really appreciate it, and good work.
Thank you so much for having me, y'all. This was fun.
All right. Well, coming up next, we have so much to talk about. What shocking thing did this person mail to her ex-boyfriend after he cheated? Honestly, this sounds like something a Shar Jassel would probably do. More show coming up after this. Don't go anywhere.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
Hey, we have to talk about how Geico was ordered to pay $5.2 million to a woman who claims she caught an STD during sex in a car. So a Missouri woman who claims she caught a STD when she had sex with her boyfriend.
Specifically HPV.
Well, yes, we were going to get into the details. She had sex with her boyfriend in his vehicle, has been awarded a $5.2 million settlement from her now ex-partner's car insurance. So Geico has decided to contest the decision in federal court, arguing that the claim is not covered under the policy. Yeah, I would assume catching an STD from your boyfriend who, I guess, probably was cheating on you, because that's the reason how he got it. Like, just because it happened in the car, how does she even connect it to even doing it to Geico? Like, I don't even understand.
That is such a strange lawsuit to file.
That is wild.
Why not sue him directly?
Yeah, right. But maybe she, like, he poor. So we yeah, get in the car. I know who your car insurance is. So we're going
to
get this done.
We're going to the Geico Gecko. Okay.
So an arbitrator later found that the couple's sex in the vehicle, quote, directly caused or directly contributed to cause the HPV infection. The insurer asked for the award to be tossed out, claiming the judgment violated its right to due process, but its request was denied and it appealed. And so the three-judge panel found that the lower court did not err by denying GEICO's motion, saying the company did not have a right to relitigate those issues. One of the judges even concurred, but said that the company was offered, quote, no meaningful opportunity to participate in the lawsuit and existing law. They got $5 million. I mean, they can just toss that to her. But, like, also, if she wins this, if she actually gets that money, everyone's going to sue.
Yeah. Well, you know, now the kids at the elementary school can sue one another.
I can literally be like, oh my God, I slammed my hand in the car. I'm suing my Progressive Insurance.
Are you with Progressive?
Yeah. I actually like them.
I'm an Allstate girl.
I was with GEICO before, and they were just expensive. But I had an awful driver's record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like when I was growing up, I got into a lot of accidents.
And you know premiums are already higher for boys.
I know, and it's just now got down to like a good premium.
Yeah.
Where, because everything has fallen off. I mean, it took me like 7,000 years for it to happen, but it finally did. But this is wild. I mean, it's not like the $5 million is going to heal that HPV, girl. You're still going to have it.
You got to get the one step. Remember that commercial? One step changes everything.
That wasn't for a yeast infection?
No, that's for HPV. And they were doing like drill team practice. Sorry, I have a weird library in my head, you all.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, Channel Q.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.